Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Michael Kaiser has been the president of the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts in Washington, D.C. since January of 2001. Prior to that, he was the executive director of the Royal Opera House in the U.K. and the executive director of the American Ballet Theatre. Kaiser has the sterling and impressive reputation of taking the helm at large arts organizations and bringing them out of debt, into profits, never sacrificing, always celebrating, and expanding the art they produce. Some of his artistic programs during his tenure at the Kennedy Center include an unprecedented celebration of the works of Stephen Sondheim, major festivals of the arts of China, Japan, and 22 countries in the Arab world, festivals of gospel, country, and a cappella music, and a celebration of August Wilson's 10 plays, presented in sequential order. Last week, Kaiser spoke at Skidmore College in Saratoga Springs, New York, and on his way back to D.C., he stopped by our studios. Michael Kaiser, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you so much.
I get to speak with you today because you were at Skidmore College in Saratoga Springs last night giving a lecture entitled Great Art Well Marketed. How did the event go?
It was wonderful. I've actually spent 2 days there talking with students and with faculty and with members of the community and doing this event last night as well.
And when you go to a university and speak for a few days or give an event like last night, what are you hoping to convey to the audience? What do you want to accomplish?
There are different members of the audience. To the students who are studying arts management, I'm trying to give them some ideas that they might be thinking about as they pursue their careers running arts organizations. Many people in the audience will be board members, and I'm talking to them as well to talk to about what makes an arts organization successful and how boards can be helpful in that endeavor.
You began your career in the corporate sector a while ago now, and you've had much success in the arts sector since then. When you decided to switch over, how did you decide to make that change?
I was trained as an opera singer, and I really wanted to be an opera singer, but I was really awful. And then I got into the corporate world and had a successful consulting business. But while I was doing that, I served on the board of the local opera company, the Washington Opera. Mm-hmm. And I realized I really wanted to be working there, not just on the board. So I sold my consulting business and looked for a job in the arts, and that's really how it started.
And I realize this is asking you to brag, but why do you think it is that you are so good at your job?
Oh, thank you. I really believe that what makes arts organizations successful is doing interesting art. And I really believe that if that art is marketed really well, the combination brings lots of people into your family, the people who want to support the organization. And they provide the revenue you need to do more good art. And I figured that out pretty early. And I've spent a lot of time with organizations that are troubled trying to get them to realize that you don't save your way to health, you create new projects and wonderful visionary projects that are going to get people to want to participate. And that's really how you create health in the arts.
And when you go to a place, a troubled organization, what are they most often doing wrong?
Most often they've hit some kind of financial bump, and their reaction to that bump is to try and save money. And the way they try and save money is to cut back on discretionary spending, which is almost always art and marketing. But when you cut back on art and marketing, you cut out the very reasons people support you. So their first reaction to this problem is they actually makes things worse.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes this vicious cycle where they cut back on art and marketing, they have less money, so they cut even more, and they have less money, and they cut even more, and they get sicker and sicker and sicker.
It's important to you to develop relationships with artistic ventures across the, not just the country, but the globe. Why do you think it's important to work with arts organizations internationally?
Oh, I think that's crucial because if we're going to build peace in this world, we have to understand each other. And I think the arts are a wonderful way of learning about other people, what they think about, what they worry about, what they find beautiful. And I think we can find so much common ground that really starts a dialogue between different people with different political perspectives.
And in your work with various arts in varying nations, what have you seen or learned that they're possibly doing differently from the U.S. that is right that you've adopted and tried to bring over here?
I think the biggest differences have to do with the way the arts are funded around the world. And in our country, we've had a separation of art and state because mm-hmm. we were founded by the Puritans who thought that music and dance were evil. So,
right.
So we've always been relying on private funding, and the rest of the world, most of the rest of the world has relied primarily on government funding, on public funding. But most governments around the world are actually cutting back on their funding right now. And so they're being forced to look at the American model a little bit more. And so a lot of my work is going around the world teaching arts organizations how to start to build a private funding base. What's interesting is that as you do this, you realize that people are people. And what motivates people in the United States is not so different from what motivates them in Pakistan or in South Africa or in South America.
You spend a lot of time on the road doing events like this at universities, or as we've just mentioned, traveling across around the world. What is a snapshot of a sort of year in your life look like? How often are you actually at the Kennedy Center? How often are you abroad?
I'm at the Kennedy Center the vast majority of the time. I would say 60-70% of the time. I do travel a good amount. A lot of it is teaching, and a lot of it is consulting to other arts organizations. Some of it is fundraising. Some of it is talking on radio programs.
Sure.
And so I'm fortunate to be able to work with arts leaders and government leaders literally across the globe. But the vast majority of the time is in Washington running the Kennedy Center, doing our artistic planning, raising money, and doing marketing the way any arts manager would do.
How involved are you, or how many people do you work with to oversee what will be scheduled on the stages at the Kennedy Center?
I'm very involved in programming. I believe that that is our product, and I have to be engaged in that activity. I do have several programmers who work with me, each one in a different area. So I have someone in theater, I have someone in dance, I have someone in ballet, I have someone in international programming, someone with our symphony, someone with our opera company. So I'm working with a group of programmers. But I think what makes the Kennedy Center special is that because all of those art forms report up to one person, me, we have the opportunity to cross art form projects that are harder to do in other contexts. So we do festivals of work that will cover a very broad range of art forms. So for example, this coming season, a big project will be a festival of the Nordic countries, the culture of Sweden and Finland and Norway and Denmark. And we're looking at the classical music and the contemporary music and the jazz and the theater and the dance and the ballet and the food. And we can cross genres so much more easily because we do work in each of these different art forms.
And how does something like that festival get conceived? Whose idea is it to start putting it together?
You know, ideas come from so many people. Some are my own. Some are my individual programmers. Some come from ideas we hear from others. I'm open to ideas from absolutely anybody. And then we think and talk about it. But we give ourselves the luxury of 5 years to plan every big project.
Okay.
5 years to make it excellent, 5 years to market it, 5 years to raise the money for it. And we find that yields much more interesting and much richer programming than if we rush things.
Do you want to tell me about, because I want to learn more about, the Barbara Cook Spotlight Series?
Sure. Barbara Cook's one of the great artists. I'm in this field because when I was 4 years old, my parents took me to see The Music Man on Broadway, and she was the star. And when she sang Goodnight, My Someone, and her house was a scrim, and you could see into the house all of a sudden, that magical moment has always stayed with me. And now I'm lucky enough to employ Barbara Cook, who runs our cabaret series. We pick each year about six artists who come and perform in one of our more intimate theaters. We have 9 theaters at the Kennedy Center, and this is a theater that seats about 500, and we have wonderful performers who come and sing and do their cabaret acts, and it's really a fantastic opportunity for the audience to get very close and intimate with a performer.
In looking ahead at that schedule, I saw a few. They were all women. Is it always all women?
No, that just happened to be a group that you saw that's coming up soon.
Okay.
But no, it's a good mix.
What are some of the presentations you've put on, either at the Kennedy Center or in your previous jobs, that you are most proud of, that you carry as a badge of success?
My first big project at the Kennedy Center was a huge festival of the works of Stephen Sondheim. We produced 6 of his musicals and did several auxiliary events that were really important because they put the Kennedy Center on the theater producing map again.
Mm-hmm.
We just did a musical, Follies, also by Stephen Sondheim, that just went to Broadway and
is now going to Broadway.
Los Angeles.
It was glorious.
Thank you. So that was very exciting. We did the 10 plays of August Wilson. We've done big festivals of the cultures of China and of Japan and most recently of the Arab world that I'm really proud of. They were unusual and work that our audiences didn't know so well. Those are big projects. I did a whole project on the Masters of African American Choreography, really looking at the history of African American dance in America, which I thought was really special. There's just been a whole range. We do 2,000 performances a year, so
yeah.
We better do a few that are interesting.
That's right. Now, the calendar is daunting. Like, if you were to just be like, I'm going to Washington, D.C. Maybe I'll check out something at the Kennedy Center. It'd be quite a research experiment to figure out what you should see.
There's an awful lot. We're very lucky to have such a large venue with so many special theaters and the opportunity to work in so many different art forms. We have a big jazz program, a huge chamber music program as well. So there's so many different projects we do.
And since you've taken over, you have worked on refurbishing some of the theaters Why was that important?
The center was built in the late 1960s. It opened in 1971. It was 40 years old. It is 40 years old, mm-hmm. and it needed some refurbishment, particularly to make the spaces more wheelchair accessible, but mm-hmm. also just to make it a little bit more up to date. And so most of the building now has been renovated, and there's a little bit more to go, but we're very pleased that we now have a building that's really capable of handling every visitor.
And in the second half of this decade with the recession, how has everything been?
It's always a challenge, but I don't do deficits. We've never had a deficit in my career, and I have not had a deficit at the Kennedy Center. We've had 11 years of surpluses in a row, which is great. Mm-hmm. We're raising a lot more money. It's more challenging to raise the money, but my belief is that if you do interesting programming, you'll be the last to be cut during a recession, and that's worked out well for us at the Kennedy Center.
And what are some of your special tactics for keeping funds coming in?
One is to every year do work that's a little bit surprising. I don't want any 2 years to look the same. Mm-hmm. So every year, when I announce the season, I want people to be a bit surprised by what we announce. And then also, we do very aggressive, what I call institutional marketing, which is to get, it's the events and announcements and special projects that get people to say, wow, that's really an interesting place. I want to participate. And then hopefully handling the donor base very well. We have 30,000 donors. I have to raise $80 million a year just to keep the doors open. That's not for capital. And so it's a very big target. And so we have to be very good to our donors so that they're very good back to us.
How long do you envision that you will keep working, keep this job?
I was meant to leave this past December.
Okay.
But last year we affiliated with our local opera company, the Washington National Opera, which was the organization on whose board I sat way back when. Mm-hmm. And because of that affiliation, it didn't seem appropriate to do the big affiliation and then walk away. So I've agreed to stay on as president through 2014. And then I will step down as president, but I'll stay at the Kennedy Center doing the arts management training work that I do across the country and across the world.
So you have a fantastic plan.
I've got a plan all in place.
Michael Kaiser, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today, and have a safe trip back to D.C.
Thank you so much.
Michael Kaiser is the president of the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.